Okay, let's continue here. So then we have one final thing. I mean, I can go on and on. This list of dichotomies can extend for quite a list, but I'll just leave it at this and end it here with this idea of theory then and praxis. Theory is the realm, again, of thinking in the Greek theoria and praxis. These two were then developed by Plato's students and first mentioned by Aristotle. And so we've got this it's just a dichotomy, two opposites. Later, Hegel then, who's in the 19th century, we can skip, fast forward all these philosophers down through the centuries and get to Hegel, 19th century philosopher, who then thought that he found the answer to all of these dichotomies. Now, if you've never studied philosophy, the whole idea of trying to figure out what's ethical and what's right and wrong and what's the meaning of existence, and if you take all the big questions of life, when philosophy tries to answer it, it just comes up with contradictions. Well, if it's this, but what about this? And, you know, you can argue from different positions, but the two remain separate. Hegel came along, and with the concept of the dialectic, thought that he had resolved all these dichotomies and thought that I can bring the ideal together with the actual, and I can take theory and practice. Praxis is the Greek word merely for doing or action. And so I've got the realm of theory and the realm of action, or praxis. And we're going to use that word because it becomes a buzzword later on in Marxist terminology. The problem with that is if I synthesize a dialectic, by the way, we'll get into the dialectic in just a moment. But if I take theory as an objective viewpoint, if I take the realm of thinking, it has a distance between action or what takes place. And as such, it is in a position to judge or measure what the actual or the real or the judgments are. I just stepping off the plane in Dallas, I saw a big billboard, and it's got Tiger Woods in one of his follow-through shots. And it says, there comes a time where execution is more important than theory. And it's this dichotomy. So in other words, it says that the action or the execution or the praxis is more important than the theory. And that's very Marxist, if you know the structure of the language. Because they're saying that what you do, it doesn't matter what the ideal is. It doesn't matter what the is-is are. It doesn't matter what is, you know, these higher ideals that judge your actions. If I mash them together like a giant can crusher and the top and the bottom are separated and I bring them together, I now make action, or human action, the priority over theory or what is. Now, and that reminds me, I have to make the distinction, if you haven't already caught it. The Greeks, now I'm using their language, I'm kind of stuck using their language. Scripture and the Christian wouldn't say that theory is equated with what is. The Greek thinkers did, and that's the only reason I'm using that word. They figured by theorizing and contemplation, they could arrive at what is permanent in the realm of the ideal, the realm of the forms. I could find out what that unchanging measure of all things is in relation to the cat, let's say. I can find the unchanging permanent is of the cat. But you can never get there. So theory can't get you an is, but I'm stuck with their language. And I want to make that distinction that theory is not something that you don't measure all things by a theory. A theory is a theory, it's not a fact. So, and this is reflected, I just thought I'd throw this up here. This is a painting by Raphael, 1510, I think is when he completed it. The name of it is The School of Athens. And he's got everybody, all the famous Greek philosophers. This is kind of a summation of all of Greek philosophy. And, of course, we don't recognize them by face, but there's all the, you know, Epicurus and all these guys are in the painting, and they're all doing different things and relating with one another, and it's so very symbolic. But if you notice, in the very center there is Plato and Aristotle. And you notice Plato is on the right, and he's gesturing upward. And Aristotle on the left, is gesturing downward. So Plato, in essence, or Raphael, he's reflecting this long-standing understanding of the Platonic, or the ideal, is found separate from the actual. And Aristotle here is gesturing, says, no, the ideal is found down here. The ideal is in the forms, in the actual. Okay. So Here, we can move on from this. And the dialectic, of course, and this is Hegel's form usage, and he applied them. The dialectic isn't something in and of itself. It's a process. And you can apply the dialectic to a number of different things. And Hegel applied it to all these categories. Thesis simply means position, and there's an opposite position or antithesis. And he thought, well, between the ideal and the actual, and mind and matter, and theory and practice, and all these different categories, that he can find the resolution to them all in synthesis or finding their common position. And he wrote mind-numbing, encyclopedic-length books on taking all of these categories, and he discussed every known philosopher that was within his reach, and you know, tried to synthesize this whole view. He saw himself as the end of all philosophy. He fixed all these dichotomies and all these problems in history. But you know, he was still left in a problem. He did it all intellectually. He did it all in the realm of the mind. He acted as the subject and made these determinations, these syntheses, these grand syntheses of all these different categories, but he still left it, and he did it in the realm of the mind. When we, however, take praxis and elevate it over theory, you come up with this statement: the philosophers have only interpreted the world in different ways. The point, however, is to change it. And of course, this was Karl Marx, and this brings us to a discussion of what he did. He took Hegel naturally, but he turned it on its head. Notice that he said the philosophers have only interpreted the world, or theory. They've only interpreted the world in different ways. The point, however, is to change it. He says, forget all of this, you know, theorizing, and forget all of this, you know, mental philosophical gymnastics. He says, the change has to be made in the world. You can't do it with your mind. It's a matter of praxis. And he inverted the two. So what he did was consciously, if, and I only say if, we grant the history of philosophy the benefit of the doubt in saying that they were genuinely interested in finding out the ideal and trying to figure out the meaning of life and trying to find the answers to all of human existence, albeit through human reason, and that they had a genuine interest in doing so. I don't. I think they had another agenda. But let's just grant the fact that they did. Marx, if he stood at the end of that line of that history of Western philosophy, he consciously and deliberately inverted the two. And this is what makes Marx so difficult to understand, is if you have a background in understanding these philosophical concepts, he discusses them in such a way it's actually brutally confusing. But it's done by intention, because he's hiding an agenda. He's actually covering, he's using this philosophical language as a front to hide a revolutionary agenda. Because we all know that Marx and Marxism produced communism. He was justifying communism, which had some very bloody results in the 19th and 20th centuries. But he did it all with this philosophical language. And that's why I wanted to educate you, at least give you the background in discussing these terms, because then when he uses them, you know what he's talking about. So we can get rid of all of these things. And Marx discussed, this is, you know, theory and praxis became really common, the common coin of Marx's language. But as we showed, he inverted theory and praxis and placed praxis over theory. So it doesn't matter what the ideal is anymore. It's only what you do. It's only human action that can be judged. And the human action, again, inverts subject and object. I, the human that does the working and does the acting in history, he does what Eve did in stepping into the shoes of God and saying, I'm no longer an object, I'm a subject. And I can determine the difference. I can cleave between good and evil. I can make that decision for myself. That's really what he meant by elevating and emphasizing praxis over theory. So, he goes on to say, And again, the wealth of material that we can employ to quote is, you know, I'm going to quote out of certain books in here, but by no means are they particular or peculiarly special. They just happen to have some of the quotes that I wanted. This one is Karl Marx by Bottomore. The resolution of theoretical contradictions is possible only through practical means. See how he inverted theory and praxis? Philosophers up to this point have only interpreted the world. The point is to change it. So forget all these, you know, quit trying to figure out resolving all these contradictions in history. I'm sorry, in philosophy. It must be done in history. Only through the practical energy of man. So this becomes really the essence of Marx's agenda. Human action. Human revolutionary action. This is Joseph O'Malley. I think he wrote this in the 60s. He was a Marxist out of England, a Marxist scholar. He said, in short, philosophy as theory finds the ought implied within the is. See, we already discussed that. Is doesn't take priority. We're looking to, each time we give an ought, I mean an is, 2 plus 2 is 4, we look for an ought in there. That's the goal of philosophy, is to find out that ought, bring out the ought that's implied within the is. And as praxis, or human activity, seeks to make the two coincide. So I'm looking at these dichotomies and trying to merge them. I'm trying to get them together to resolve these contradictions. But it's only through human activity. The philosopher views the world with critical eyes. And we're going to come back to this word critical because it has to do with the dialectic. Measuring existence against the essence, or the actual against the ideal is another way to put it. The actual against the ideal, and the is against the ought. You see, this is Marxist language. And without this background and a little, you know, learning the language of philosophy to hide, that they use to hide the agenda of social revolution. The difference between the reality and the potentiality was the starting point of the dialectical process. This is the life and teaching of Karl Marx by John Lewis. You see, the dialectic starts. This is the starting point between reality and potential. In this moment, in this room, we are in reality, right? This room has the potential to be something other than what it is. So the difference between is and ought is also a difference between the reality and the potential. We see we have this potential world that we can, and the potential is what Marx was shooting for. It's what Eve shot for when she stood at the tree and went, wow, I live in the world as it is, but I can envision it as it ought to be. And again, this is an inversion of all these, of is and ought, subject and object, etc. So to change the world, according to Marx, was to praxis it. And so this word is probably more key to understanding Marx than any other word. And it becomes a buzzword. It's changed. It has a peculiar Marxist meaning to it, as opposed to what Aristotle and others that came before Marx used. This became kind of the buzz for revolution. And a lot of the Marxist theoreticians after him, the Marxist intellectuals, they would use this word as a code word to cover what they're all about. Praxis is revolution. It's human action, revolting against higher authority. Okay, and this is just a dictionary definition of what his philosophy came to be, dialectical materialism, a philosophy founded by Karl Marx, which forms the basis of communist doctrine. It combines the materialistic idea of matter in the Hegelian dialectic in which opposing forces are constantly being reunited at a higher level. So we saw all these philosophical categories, and they're always being, they synthesize and meet at higher and higher levels. So it has this idea of evolution, social evolution. The dialectic, going back to the Greek philosophers, even supported a evolutionary worldview. Now, it was also, now Marx got his doctorate in philosophy. He wrote, his doctoral thesis was on Epicurus and Democritus, the difference between the two. And you can get it online. Just go online and pull up Marx's doctoral thesis. And you'll see in there, it just is this, it goes on and on and on, and you really wonder, why is this such an important topic? But in those two, he went into this discussing the differences, because he was talking about Democritus's atomic theory, that there's a determinism. that fate and the forces around the atom determine its future. But he says, Epicurus says, no, the atom is subject to changes, self-imposed changes. And so he placed the emphasis on Epicurus. And so he finds a revolutionary philosophy in the difference of those two. So here he is, a doctorate of philosophy, and how does he get this massive revolutionary doctrine out of this philosophy? Well, it was also during this period, too, that Marx discovered, from his comparative study of political constitutions, that social and political structures are dependent upon property relations. Oh, does this sound familiar? American founding was based on property relations.